Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
It is Red Friday, and it's another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Iron Horse Bar and Grill, located on the corner of Nall and 151st Street in Leawood, Kansas. They've got great drink specials, as you know, running 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, and a reverse happy hour Sunday through Thursday, 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. Those deals include premium Wells and domestic drafts for $3 or a Tito's Mule for $6. So go on down to Iron Horse Bar and Grill on the corner of Nall and 151st Street in Leawood. Also, a shout-out to Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Though all the focus right now is shifted on the Buffalo Bills, the Chiefs did make some transactions yesterday, and one of them could very well be argued as controversial. And you know what? I'm not even going to argue it. It is a controversial signing, as the Chiefs added former first-round cornerback who played for the Raiders, also played at Ohio State, Damon Arnette, to a reserves futures contract. He'll be on the practice squad. Now, for those of you that don't know the name Damon Arnette, he was released by the Raiders earlier this year for basically posting a video. I don't remember, was it Instagram? Instagram, Marco tells me, that he had a gun. He was threatening somebody. There was leaks of DM messages between, I guess, him and this guy. But it wasn't a good look, because in this video, he's holding the gun. He's telling the guy to come see him. He's going to kill him. And the Raiders thought, we have way too much going on right now to deal with that now. We had the John Gruden stuff, you had the Henry Ruggs situation, and now your first-round cornerback from the same draft you took Henry Ruggs in is on social media basically making threats to somebody. So the Raiders release him. Nobody picks him up. And then yesterday, the Chiefs decide, let's give him a second chance. We'll see what we can get out of him. And it's not the first time Kansas City has given a second chance to somebody. You know, whether that be even Tyreek Hill, who fell in the draft from his college situation. You know, what happened at Oklahoma State? He slipped in the draft. The Chiefs gave him another chance. Even go back to, it was last year, DeAndre Baker, a former first-round cornerback, got in some off-field trouble. But the Chiefs decided it's a, I guess you could say a, I don't know if you can go as far as say high risk, high reward. You know, when you have that controversy around you, but you could also say it's a low risk, high reward because they're on the practice squad. They may not even make the roster, but they do have first round talent. And Damon Arnette didn't have a great career in the NFL to start. He was by no means one of the better cornerbacks for the Raiders. But from a football standpoint, it's not a bad move. From a controversial standpoint, from maybe an ethical standpoint, it's not so much of a good move. Arnette also, you know, this is more of just, I think, kind of the stupidity of it, is that in one point in his NFL career, in a span of a month, he wrecked 4 rental cars. Now, I don't know where this rental agency was, but I would have said that's enough after 2. Or maybe he had to go to different ones. I'm not quite sure. But there was a lot of problems going on with Damon Arnette to start his NFL career. And even the Raiders thought, all right, we're not going to deal with this anymore. No, you weren't charged with anything, but that's a bad look and we don't want it on our team anymore. We're going to release you. And then time went by and sort of that gets out of the media. You know, nobody's really focusing on it anymore. And the Chiefs think, well, he may not make our roster, but he's a first-round talent. We'll give him a shot. Here's where I kind of stand on the situation. One, the move doesn't shock me because the Chiefs have done it before. You know, you can go as far back to DeAndre Baker. Now, DeAndre Baker's situation is a little bit different, but still, This is not the first time. Not necessarily the Chiefs either. Other NFL teams have done this before, giving guys second chances. And I guess you can kind of weigh this situation, right? If Damon Arnett was threatening somebody and something came of that, then yes, I am not for giving him a second chance. And I'm still kind of on the fence of, you know, why are you rewarding that? Somebody that proved a couple of times in his very short career in the NFL that he wasn't trustworthy. But the Chiefs go, all right, let's see what he's got football-wise, and we'll see if we can sort of steer him in the right direction. He's still very young. You know, was it a very stupid thing that he did? Of course it was. It was a stupid thing when he wrecked all the rental cars. But I guess, Marco, I'll ask you this question, because I'm curious where a couple of people stand on this. You know, because I saw all over Twitter people hounding the Chiefs, you know, calling the Chiefs the only team in the NFL that picks up guys that are in trouble with the law. I mean, this came on the day that, or I guess the day after that Willie Gay was arrested. You know, and though there's different reasons for both situations, you may think, well, Willie Gay was arrested for a minor reason, you know, breaking the vacuum cleaner. I think it was breaking a door frame as well. But when you look at that, it's just kind of the look of one of your defensive stars gets arrested, then you add another guy who's in trouble with the law. I mean, where do you stand on this situation? Is this an ethical thing to do? Can you just look at this from a football standpoint? Or are you going, I don't want that guy anywhere near, not even the active roster, but the practice squad?
Who, Damon Arnett?
Yes.
Did he harm anyone?
Not that we know of.
Did he commit an illegal crime?
No.
Did he go to prison?
No.
Was he arrested? Was he charged with anything?
Nope. Nope, nope, nope.
Was he acting stupid?
Absolutely.
Then I would say that ethics is thrown out of the window when it comes to business. In this type of industry. In some cases, I guess. I guess ethical reasonings aren't thrown out the window completely, I should say, but it is definitely a business move. And Damon Arnett, I think, knows going in. I think the reason that he is signed with this team is because both sides agreed if you slip up one more time, it's done. Obviously, no other team was willing to give him a shot the first go around when he hit the waivers. But the Chiefs are a organization of second chances. They are built around a group of leaders who believe in second chances. And there's a couple of guys on the roster who are on their second chance right now. So I don't mind it. If the dude can ball, if he can come in here and help the Chiefs in a position where they are needing depth at, then so be it. But I guarantee it. He's on strike two right now, and strike three, he's out of here for Kansas City. So, and I think he knows that too. And yeah, it's a wait and see type of game. But notice how he hasn't been in the news since getting released from the Raiders. Maybe he's somebody that didn't know what consequences were going to come from his acts back when he was in Las Vegas. Just got to come in here with a smarter mindset, and I think that the teammates around him will do their best to ensure that, or do their best to make sure that he doesn't slip up. But at the end of the day, he makes his own decisions, and if he does it again, then I think he knows now what the consequences are versus what he didn't know back in Las Vegas.
And I don't want to jump to conclusions, but it does feel like if Damon Arnett fails in Kansas City, if he can't even make the roster, or he has some other off-field problem that happens and he's gone, he's probably done in the NFL.
Yeah,
right? Wait,
no.
Some bad organization could give him a third chance, but I feel like when you look at Kansas City, I mean, this is really the land of opportunity for guys wanting a second chance. Or just guys that fell in the draft. I mean, we talked about Tyreek Hill, you know, slipping in the draft after what happened in Oklahoma State. Even, let's go, the guy that was all in the headlines yesterday, Willie Gay. Like, there were some problems at Mississippi State. He had some issues. But I'm sure when the Chiefs meet with those players, it is, if you slip up again, you're done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, right. You are off our team. You know, Josh Gordon, a guy. All these guys have different reasons of second chances, and Josh Gordon's another one, right? And nobody was really giving him a chance because he's had, what, third, fourth, fifth chance to get things turned around. But so far in Kansas City, it's been smooth sailing in terms of just staying out of trouble. Now, on-field production hasn't been as great.
Right.
But still, Kansas City, this is why when everybody was sort of shocked this happened, I was like, why are we shocked? I mean, Kansas City is known for doing this. They give second chances to guys, whether that be a cheap one-year deal. I mean, that's kind of the thing. If the Chiefs went out and signed Damon Arnett to a two-year, you know, $2 million deal, I'm going, well, what the hell are you doing? But this is adding him to the practice squad, a reserves futures contract. Some of those guys never see the active roster. And now you have a first-rounder, just like with DeAndre Baker. That was kind of the move. It was DeAndre Baker was released from the Giants for off-field stuff. The Chiefs go, let's see what we can make of him on the practice squad. And then eventually, this year, he's played a little bit and played well. Like, that's probably what they're seeing, a similar path for Damon Arnett. Football move, it's a good move. Now, as you pointed out, did he hurt anybody? No, not that we know of. Was he arrested? No. Was he stupid? Of course he was.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can learn from those things, a 21, 22, 23-year-old kid, then you can kind of, you know, maybe take pride in that, that a guy that threw away his career 2 years in the NFL, you can help him get back to the level that he always dreamed about as a kid. Because that's where I also kind of look at it, too. You know, most people, I mean, it also depends on the team. Like, right now, the Chiefs are arguably the best team in the AFC, one of the best teams in the NFL. When they sign a guy like that, everybody else in the NFL is, well, look at them. They have no ethical high ground. They're a terrible organization. They're built like the longest yard team.
Oh, man.
And basically all that type of stuff. They go say that. But if it's their team, it's, well, everybody else does it. You know, they don't really pay attention. But it's when it's a team that's succeeding and they're getting players like that. Like, saw all of Las Vegas' fan base very upset yesterday. And I would see the side of it. You know, your arch rival takes one of your first-round picks, somebody that you released, and they're like, we'll give him a chance. And I think when the Chiefs look at it, they go, do we really want a 21, 22-year-old kid to make a mistake, a stupid mistake, and say, no longer. You're never going to play again in the NFL. Everything you worked up for, you're done. Right? And as you pointed out, which is a thing we can take into account, it was more stupid than anything.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh,
just kind of puffing out his chest, saying, you know, I can kill you if I wanted to. You know, showing the gun in the video and making those threats, and then also having those rental car issues. But when you look at it, I mean, we've all made mistakes. Maybe some of you have never made a mistake to that magnitude. You know, posting on your social media accounts, threatening somebody. Right? That's a very stupid decision.
Mm-hmm.
But go back to when you were 21 or 22, maybe 18 or 19, and you make a really bad decision. Maybe get involved with the law. You got arrested. Whatever it is. Would you want whoever your employer to be to say, that's it, you're not getting a second chance. One strike, you're done. I don't want you anywhere near my business. But unlike people like that who, maybe you're working at a 9-to-5 job, these are NFL players that their entire life, ages 4 to 20, it's been all I focus about is getting to the NFL, staying in the NFL, being one of the best players in the NFL. If 1 year into their job, they have that strip from them from a bad mistake, do they deserve a second chance? And I think that's where everybody sort of looks at situations like this. Do they deserve a second chance? I think you can look at what type of mistake they made. You know, even look at Kareem Hunt. The Chiefs did not cut him because it was the first mistake. It was because Kareem Hunt lied about the situation. He was caught in the lie, and they said, we're not going to be looking like fools for that. Mm-hmm. You told us there was no issue. Then we found out there was an issue. Therefore, we cut you. But look, it was what? Less than a year later, the Browns go, all right, time's passed. We think we can turn you around. We think we can give you that second chance. Like, teams have done this before. And for the Chiefs, like you said, Damon Arnett wasn't arrested. Right? There could be a lot worse. He could have carried out what he was saying in the video. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I'm going, yeah, there would be no second chance, right? He would he would be in prison, right? But when it's just sort of making that dumb, stupid mistake, I think sometimes you have to look at that and go, are we really going to let a 21, 22-year-old kid throw his life away on one night of bad mistakes? Now, for the rental car issues, that's four bad mistakes, but that's nowhere near what that video was sort of going about or saying in it. So I think, as you said, a good football move, but from an ethical standpoint, there's been a lot worse second chance that have been given before.
Yeah. But it is the Chiefs' responsibility now and Arnett's responsibility, but it's they're taking a risk also. You know, this isn't a low-risk, high-reward type of thing. This is a high-risk, high-reward simply because of the actions that led to Arnett's release in Las Vegas. They were serious threats. This wasn't something to that you couldn't just ignore. When that video was posted on Twitter, taken from the person's DMs that Arnett had made the threats to, it was serious. I mean, he was holding. He was threatening someone's life with a weapon. And I think the Chiefs know the seriousness of that. And I think that they wouldn't have signed him if they didn't think this through. But I'm just saying it's one of those things where it's on the Chiefs now also. This is a risk for them as well, and it's a liability to the franchise. You hope that that's in the past and Arnett learns from his mistakes, but it is on the Chiefs now. It is a high-risk, high-reward, not one of those low-risk, high-rewards like Josh Gordon was when they signed him earlier this season.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the things they had in conversation. It was, listen, if you mess up, it doesn't just look bad on you, it looks bad on us. And we don't want to look in the middle of this right now, our playoff run, and even next year, if you're in trouble, you make our organization look bad. And I'm sure he had to admit, you know, I will make sure I stay out of trouble. And we'll just see what is in store for Damon Arnett and his future with the Kansas City Chiefs. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll be talking with Jordan Foote in studio and previewing this AFC divisional round between the Chiefs and the Bills. You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. As always, I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We are now joined in studio by digital content manager at Sports Radio 810, deputy editor at SI Chiefs, and editor-in-chief of Inside Rose. Lots of jobs right there for you, Jordan, but you do a fantastic job of it. But you know the reason you're in here today. We got the biggest game of the season coming up on Sunday night against the Buffalo Bills. Let's just start it off with that. Going into this game, from what we know with who will be playing, how these two teams match up, what are you expecting to happen on Sunday night between the Chiefs and the Bills?
Yeah, man, it's going to be a doozy, dude. It's going to be fun. I'm very excited for it. Week 5, everybody's making a big deal about it, saying the Chiefs got destroyed week 5. They're a whole different team, I think. Defensively, Chris Jones was injured. Frank Clark was injured. They didn't have Melvin Ingram. Nick Bolton either wasn't playing much or was out of position. Dan Sorensen was the starting safety. Like, the Chiefs, they were getting used to what they had and what they didn't have. Offensively, I think the Patrick Mahomes injury and, like, surgery in the offseason – people just assumed he'd get used to the offensive line right off the bat. It didn't happen. And people were reminded that he's mortal just like all of us. You know, so it's a totally different Chiefs team. Everything is different now. Heading into the game, they played lackluster against Denver. They started off that way against Pittsburgh. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe the Chiefs just don't want to show up this year and they're done. They showed up. It's just a matter of if they do that. And what better team to not show up or to play than the Bills, who haven't shown up several times this year. Half the time you don't know what you're going to get. I'm very excited for this game because none of us know what to expect. We can give our best guess, but it's going to be a good one, man.
And I think it's so interesting when we talk about that week 5 game, right? And that the Chiefs lost by 3 scores. But what you forget in that moment is that The Bills went up against the Chiefs defense without Chris Jones, without Charvarius Ward, and Dan Sorensen played over 90% of the snaps, so Juan Thornhill wasn't on the field a lot. Like you said, Nick Bolton didn't really have a big responsibility in that game. Willie Gay, though, I'm expecting him to play. You expect him to play. Like, that was his first game coming off that turf toe injury. There's a lot of missing pieces there, and now you have them. And on the Bills side, though you get Matt Milano back, you don't have Trey White.
Yeah.
So can you really just throw out everything from that Week 5 game? Because these are two very different teams this time around.
Yeah, I think pretty close to it. Like, the reputation precedes both of those teams, where Josh Allen, the crazy arm, the crazy plays, you still don't know what you're going to get with him. He's still inconsistent. He still has good games and bad games. He's capable of putting them on his back, doesn't always do it. Defensively, you can throw the whole EPA and all that, like the analytics stuff. I'm not anti-analytics, but like, you can't carry the entire season's worth of numbers into a playoff game. It's a week-by-week league, man. You just have to, if you have the talent advantage, which both of these teams are very talented, you just have to get in and see what happens. And the Chiefs, better than anybody, know that the past few years. You can show up, fall behind 20 points, still come back. It's a whole different ballgame now. So I think week five, sure, the Bills like have the sense of confidence of, oh, we can beat them. We know we've already done it. But coming into Arrowhead in a playoff environment and doing it, two totally different things. So I think you can throw out almost all of week five.
And I think also, going back to that Week 5 game, the weather was terrible.
Yeah.
Right? It was raining, it was slippery, and the Bills didn't turn it over. I mean, Josh Allen, I think he was 21 of 26, very efficient. I feel like going into this game, and it sounds crazy to think about, but with, you know, Josh Allen doesn't complete over 65% of his passes, right? He can be inaccurate at times. Do you want Josh Allen in this game, if you're Kansas City's defense, to throw it over 40 times maybe? Like, Mahomes in Week 5 threw it 54, I believe.
Yeah.
And they only scored 20 points. Like, do you want Allen throwing it 40-plus times, or is that a little bit risky with him maybe having a big game?
I think you almost do want him throwing the ball. Like, the emergence of Devin Singletary, if they're running the ball well, that bodes well for Allen. Like, if he's throwing the ball a ton, A, that means they're falling behind in the game probably, or at least trying to keep up. B, it means the running game isn't working. If they're running the ball, they can keep the Chiefs off the field. People, it's a double-edged sword with that time of possession running the ball. You can do it, but you have to be able to finish drives with touchdowns. That's just how it goes. If you kick field goals, you're not going to beat the Chiefs. Whatever that Pittsburgh Steelers playoff game flashback that popped into my head says. The Bills, if Allen throws the ball 40 times, they're probably going to be behind a lot of the game. He's capable of scoring in one play. So are the Chiefs. The Chiefs can do that. But like you said, everyone thinks, you add up the yards in your head and you're like, well, if the average is 7 yards per throw and he throws 40 times, whatever, whatever. It's not about that. It's about the context of the game. And if he is spending his time throwing the ball, sure, it's more dangerous. Sure, there's a higher chance they can score. But that means they haven't scored enough. They haven't been effective. If he does that, that probably means the Chiefs defense is mostly doing its job.
We're talking with Jordan Foote, deputy editor of SI Chiefs. If you have these running backs in the game, Jerick McKinnon, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Darrell Williams, you have those three right there. And I know Clyde's getting healthier. Darrell's still a little bit banged up. And we saw what Jerick McKinnon is capable of against Pittsburgh. Who do you go with in this game? Who is your number one back on that first offensive series?
I think that's the easiest one to figure out. The hard part's lining up behind. It's got to be Jerick McKinnon, man. Until he shows that he can't do it, and granted, if he can't do it for one game and you stick with him, you could be going home. But the ceiling with him, higher than any running back on the Chiefs. Like, people keep saying, why haven't we seen Jerick McKinnon all year? A, he was a free agent signing. B, he's a veteran. He still had to learn the playbook. That's not something that just happens overnight. Then once Clyde got hurt, McKinnon had the hamstring injury. The timing just didn't add up. Best case scenario, your 29-year-old veteran who's still a really good athlete relative to who you have on the roster is good for four games, and then you let him go. That's the best case. The Chiefs haven't needed him all year. If they can milk the next, I guess, three games out of him, assuming they get to the Super Bowl, that is going to be a plus. So I think you have to go with him, what he brings in the passing game. Good pass protector for his size, which Clyde Edwards-Helaire can't say that about. Last year, even this year, they were pulling him in two-minute drills and third down situations so Darrell Williams could help out. Behind him, then it gets tricky because on a per-snap basis, I don't think Daryl Williams is as effective as Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but I think you can get the tougher yards with Daryl Williams. I think you can, even in the passing game, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, ironically, is the guy they drafted to do all this stuff with. So I think a split between those two, Williams' toe has been bothering him a lot lately, so who knows there. Then poor Derek Gore, man. You take out that 51-yard run he had earlier in the year, he really hasn't done too much. I think he, just because he showed some juice, people gravitated towards him and said he's the guy. But it's got to be McKinnon, I think, number one.
And I think that's the funny thing about this running back group is anytime it feels like, as Chiefs fans, some running back breaks open for like a 12-yard run.
That's
right. We're like, oh, he's the guy. He's the hot hand we're going with now. But what was it about Jerick McKinnon that all of a sudden, you know, last two games, now he's all of a sudden effective? I know he was hurt the majority of this year, but this really feels like the Jerick McKinnon they went out and expected him to be when they signed him back in the offseason.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes back to Andy Reid. And it was frustrating. They haven't been running those gap power runs with Clyde Edwards-Helaire when he's the one that needs them the most, more than anybody, I think. They ran a lot of outside zone with guys who run 4.5s, 4.6s, 4.7s. Jerick McKinnon, now two ACLs later, he's not the 4.41 running back anymore. But compared to a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's it. I mean, he has that speed and quickness. So Andy Reid, he was in his bag last week against the Steelers. He had the phantom motion pre-snap of Tyreek Hill. Dorrice Fountain was getting involved with motion. Mecole Hardman was getting involved. Reid, it was a masterclass for him. They were, the broken plays were working. The design plays were effective. There were a few second and long runs that he's just good for every game that I didn't like. But part of it's Reid, part of it's the running back, part of it's Mahomes being comfortable. It's snowballing. Earlier in the year, you don't see this type of game because Reed's figuring out what he has. Mahomes isn't comfortable checking down routinely. The Chiefs know now, and Buffalo has that lethal duo in the secondary at safety. They're probably going to have to do more of that this week. But if they do it, it's going to open up big plays. So I think it's kind of a, I hate to say peaking at the right time because that's such a cliche, but offensively, that was kind of an example of that, I think.
And going back to that Week 5 game, I feel like Buffalo, in the back of their minds, they go, yes, we beat Kansas City, but we beat Kansas City at their lowest point, arguably, the season. They just have to go back 1 year before that. The Chiefs beat them twice. They pretty much dominated them in the AFC Championship game. But looking at Sunday night, could you make a case that going into this crowd, this will be the most hostile, the most crazy environment Josh Allen has ever played in his NFL career?
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be. Even though last year you argue the AFC Championship versus the divisional round, I'm of the opinion this kind of is the AFC Championship game. I think whoever wins this will go on to get to the Super Bowl. This, all things considered, man, the bad blood, the history between the two teams, the national media narrative of Josh Allen's better than every week it seems like a new guy versus Patrick Mahomes, which he's always the constant. This is it. Like, Arrowhead's going to be rocking. Spags is going to dial up the pressure. I think that there's merit to the whole too high shell, back off these elite quarterbacks. Josh Allen's kind of an exception, I think. If you rattle him, he's going to make bad decisions. Patrick Mahomes doesn't really, it's always his own fault. It's always he just made a stupid throw. Allen literally gets rattled and shaken up. I expect the Chiefs to do that. It's going to be very, very tough. And a testament to him if he can overcome it, man. He has the odds stacked against him. Is the line down to like 1.5 now?
I think it is exactly 1.5. I know it was 2.5, but I believe it's getting lower. And I wasn't it? Mahomes has never been lower than 3 at home in the playoffs.
And Vegas has shown love to the Chiefs all year, so I'm surprised. But I think, man, it's going to say a ton about the Bills in this rivalry, not only this year but moving forward, if Buffalo is able to overcome that. They're definitely the underdogs, I think, even despite having just beat the Chiefs.
We're talking with Jordan Foote, deputy editor at SI Chiefs and digital content manager at Sports Radio 810. The funny thing about this matchup, too, is it never really felt like, even 2 years ago, like, they have two great quarterbacks, Mahomes, Allen. But now you've seen, after a couple of matchups, it seems like these fan bases, these teams hate each other. So can you make the case now that more so than the Raiders, more so Chiefs Chargers, more so than Chiefs Ravens, Chiefs Bengals, throw all that out, it's going to be the Chiefs and the Bills, Allen and Mahomes, for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I think so. And it depends. Obviously, the Chiefs could beat the Bills and then play the Bengals, and then it comes back to that. But you look at the coaches, Zach Taylor versus Sean McDermott, because I think the Bengals are going to be that second team. The Chargers, I like Brandon Staley, but he has some growing up to do as a head coach, I think. The quarterback advantage, you can argue Allen versus Burrow. Allen has the physical tools. Burrow, I think, is one of the smartest guys just ever in the NFL. The coaching advantage goes to Buffalo. The defense, it's not even close. Buffalo's defense is super legit. They're going to get Trey White back next season moving forward. I think the advantage, it's got to go to them. You have the quarterback with the tools. You have the recent history. This was the first we had seen of Mahomes versus Burrow. So I think moving forward, it's got to be that Buffalo versus Chiefs piece, regardless of the outcome of this game, I think.
And Jordan, last question for you. I asked this to Matt Derrick. I asked this to almost everybody I've seen this week. What is your final score prediction? Shootout or defensive slugfest, as Matt Derrick believes it'll be?
What was Derrick's score prediction?
He said 21-17.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, he said very low scoring because everybody believes it's going to be a shootout. He thinks it's going to be a defensive showing.
I'm going to go 30-24. That's kind of what I've settled in with all week, which it'll be the closest 30-24 game, the most respectful 24 points I can give a team to score. And it's going to be a good one. I'm excited. I think the Chiefs have the advantage if it's a close game. They've been in these before. Tyler Bass mixed a couple of extra points last week. Butker's the last one you want to talk about making all of his extra points. But I just trust the Chiefs. They're battle-tested. They've been here before. The quarterback, they still have the advantage. The head coach, they still have the advantage. So I'll go Chiefs in a six-point game.
All right, Jordan. Well, thanks so much for your time. And I guess I'll see you later today down the hall at some point. Now you're just right down, door over, really.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
That was Jordan Foote, digital content manager at Sports Radio 810 and deputy editor at SI Chiefs. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll be going over our Sunflower Showdown preview between Kansas and Kansas State this Saturday. You are listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back in to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Marco, yesterday I played some pickup basketball, and I felt a little problem in my neck, right? It was a little bit of a, went up for a layup, got fouled, felt a little bit of a tweak in my neck. And you know what the first thing I thought of was? Giving my chiropractor, Dr. Kurt Welter, a call. And schedule an appointment. And you should do the same. You play pickup basketball, you play softball, you work out, and you feel any sort of problem, shoulder, neck, back, knees, ankle, any problem, they can fix it. So don't hesitate today and call them to set up an appointment at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. You can also go into their office and schedule an appointment. It's located on 135th in Antioch in Overland Park. But if you're like me, and you're directionally challenged, just plug it into your Apple or Google Maps or Waze if you use that. Just type in Active Family Chiropractic, go in, set up an appointment, and you will be fixed within a couple of visits, if that. You know, sometimes it takes one or two visits and you're feeling good. They do that great of work over there at Active Family Chiropractic. We know the Chiefs and the Bills are the focus of the weekend, but let us not forget that on Saturday, another matchup in the Sunflower Showdown between Kansas and Kansas State will take place for the first time on the court this year. That game will be in Manhattan, Bramlage Coliseum, and will tip off at 3 p.m. on ESPN+. I almost said kickoff because I'm so much in football mode right now. Kansas coming in ranked 7th in the country at 15-2. Kansas State with two very impressive wins over Texas Tech at home and Texas on the road down in Austin in a span of a week. So now looking to make it 3 in a row over ranked opponents and beating Kansas in Manhattan. You know, when I look at this game, I feel like, I mean, it's no shock, it's going to be a very close basketball game. You know, just go back to Kansas's last showing down in Norman. They go on scoring droughts. And what Kansas State likes to do is they like to slow down the game. Kansas likes to speed up the game. So if the Jayhawks go into a scoring drought, a 5, 6, 7 minute scoring drought, and Kansas State can sort of control that tempo, that's when you can start thinking of an upset alert. Because Kansas State off back-to-back wins, everybody knows now they can do it at full strength. They can beat Tech at home. They can beat Texas on the road. And I'll be honest, they have the power, the manpower, the crowd behind them. They could pull off an upset on Saturday. Now, if you're Kansas, let's just go back to that game down in Norman. A very good Oklahoma team, an Oklahoma team that will make the NCAA tournament. I think you can make the case, though, that every team, excluding Oklahoma State, who has the violations, the penalty of not playing in the tournament this year, you can make the case that every Big 12 team could make the postseason. But with this Kansas State team, you just have to find a way to go on those runs when Kansas State, trying to slow down the tempo, isn't scoring. They did it early on in Austin, but Texas couldn't run away with it. But go to Kansas down in Norman, you know, when they weren't scoring in the second half for a 7-8 minute stretch, Oklahoma was able to nearly run away with it. But if you're a Kansas fan, here's why you should be confident. Going into that Oklahoma game, or I guess let's go second half, Remy Martin once again only had 2 points. Ochai Agbaji, until I guess the final 5 minutes, had no points. You're not getting much from your front court and David McCormick. Mitch Lightfoot was, I'll backpedal on that. Mitch Lightfoot was very good in that game. David McCormick was okay, but you didn't get that double-double that you maybe were looking for to win down in Norman. But playing a bad game against a good Oklahoma team, a team that's going to make the tournament, you get out with a win. Because that's what great teams do, and I think that's what separates the great teams in the Big 12 from the good teams from the not-so-good teams. And I think Kansas State, though they were on the brink of being the one lone bad team in this conference, they've now shown they're a good team in this conference. And I can see this going in a very similar way that the game down in Norman did for Kansas. You know, maybe at some point they're up by 10, they're up 12, and you go, all right, let's coast here. But then they go on that scoring drought. You know, the shots aren't falling, the offense doesn't look as smooth, they're not in rhythm, and then Kansas State, they start hitting some shots. They get it within 6. The crowd gets loud. They get it within a single possession. Maybe they take the lead. Like, that's probably going to happen on Saturday in Manhattan. That's the way it always goes when KU and K-State go against each other in Bramlage Coliseum. Right, no matter how good Kansas is, how good Kansas State is, no matter how much of a down year it is for Kansas, how much of an up year it is for Kansas State, or how much of a bad year, it always feels like it's close. Kansas State always has a chance. Now, if I were to make a prediction on this, and I'll be honest, I'm hesitant, because the last two times I've picked Kansas State to lose against ranked opponents, they've won. They've shut me up. They've been fantastic in those two games. But it's also going up against teams that maybe aren't a high-scoring offense. Right? You go to Texas this year. The Texas Longhorns, and points per game, are 223rd in the nation. Okay, let's go look at Texas Tech. They're known for their defense, right? Points per game, they're 142nd in the nation. Now, Kansas, it's been a little bit of a tough stretch. You know, they haven't scored a lot against Texas Tech. They didn't score a lot against Iowa State. They didn't score a lot against Oklahoma. KU is 17th in the nation. 81 points per game, and that's with a couple of down games. Kansas State, on the other hand, is 268th in the nation in points per game. Kansas, 6th in field goal percentage. They're 41st in three-point percentage. They are also 30th in assists per game. So it's a high-powered Kansas offense when they're flowing, when things are good. But you know what? Here's where this game is going to be decided. If Kansas gets out to a 15-5 lead, they can sort of build on that confidence. You're not having the crowd stay in it. If the crowd is into it all of the first half, you know you're in for a doozy for the second half. If you can keep that crowd, the Octagon of Doom, silent for the first half, I like your chances in the second half. Because that's how those upsets happen. You stayed in the first half, you're within a couple of possessions, then Kansas State always seems to go on that run in the second half. And that's the key for Kansas State. Keep it close in the first half. Keep Kansas under 35 points. Keep them under maybe 30 points if you can. Because if you do that, then they start to struggle in where to go to score. You know, David McCormick, Mitch Lightfoot in foul trouble, they can't really go to anybody else off the bench. Zach Clements isn't ready for a game like this. Maybe you go 5 guard, but then Kansas State can just counter with a 7-footer in Davion Bradford. So this Kansas State team, I think in some areas can match up well with Kansas. I don't know, though, if they have somebody that can defend the duo of Christian Brown and Ochai Agbaji. Ochai is going to get his points. Christian Brown's going to get his points. I'm sure Brown will be talking a lot of smack to that crowd that is nearly always right on the court. But I'm going to the X factor in this game. This will decide, I think, the winner and the loser. If Kansas State can keep Remy Martin completely silent, he does nothing in the game, I think it'll come down to the final minute of the game. But if Remy Martin breaks out for a 16-17-point game, I think Kansas wins by double digits. I really think they do, because if Remy Martin is scoring like they all expected he can, like Bill Self thinks he can, and then Ochai scoring and Brown scoring and David McCormick's giving you something, maybe off the bench, Jalen Coleman lands, J. Cole, as they call him, knocks down two threes. Mitch Lightfoot gives you six and six off the bench. Like Kansas, if they get this in the mid-70s, if they score mid-70s, maybe even low-70s, they're going to win this game. But like I've said with Kansas State all year long, they keep it in the low-60s, mid-60s, they give themselves a chance. Because right now, only averaging 68.2 points per game. So high-60s, but most of the time, they're winning games when it's 61-60, 65-62. If that's where Kansas is, you know, scoring in the low-60s, Kansas State is definitely going to have a legitimate shot at upsetting Kansas. But just go to this year, their point totals for Kansas, and go to their losses. They've scored 67 in the loss against Tech. They scored 73 in their loss against Dayton. They've scored in the 60s one, two, three times this year. Of their 17 games, three times they've scored in the 60s. Everything has been 70 and above. So that doesn't bode well for Kansas State. But you know what? I still think every time you go down to Bramlage, it's a tough game for Kansas. It'll be the best environment, one of the best environments they'll play in all season. I'm not going to discredit what it was like down in Lubbock because they have a great crowd down there. You know, when Kansas goes to Waco, it'll be loud. Anywhere Kansas goes, really, it's going to be a sold-out, rocking crowd, and it'll be no different on Saturday when Kansas and Kansas State tip off in the Sunflower Showdown at 3 p.m. on ESPN+. So we'll be the game you need to watch to just bridge that gap between maybe the divisional round games with both the Bengals and the Titans. Well, I guess it'll tip off around the time the Bengals and the Titans start. Yeah, if you got two TVs, watch both of them. Why not? You get some college basketball, some NFL, and then you can cap it off at night with the 49ers and the Packers. But all a sports-filled day before you can gear up for the Chiefs and the Bills on Sunday night. Before we get to some fact or fiction, as we always like to do on our Friday, three heroes to the game. Who will step up? Who will be the leaders in getting Kansas City to victory and on to their fourth consecutive AFC championship? Number one on my list, it seems to be the hero of last week. He's going to be the hero of this week. Jerick McKinnon. Jordan Foote, who was on earlier, brought up, if you got all the backs healthy, I'm still rolling with Jerick McKinnon until he proves me he can't be that number one back. And the Chiefs have gotten and won a Super Bowl with a guy that sort of emerged late, Damian Williams. They rode the hot hand. That's what this backfield is about. Kansas City needs to ride the hot hand, and when they do that, their offense completely opens up. Jerick McKinnon is a great pass blocker. He's great in the passing game. He's got great vision. I like him in the backfield. So I think Jerick McKinnon, going into this game, will be the number one back. How can he not? He had over 140 scrimmage yards against Pittsburgh, and that's no slouch of a Pittsburgh team. Offensively, yes. Defensively, it's still a very good Steelers team, and this Bills defense is the best in the NFL. You got to have your best options out there. Is Clyde your best option? In certain situations, yes, but I feel like the number one back in this game, just because Clyde and Darryl have been dealing with some injuries, I think it's going to be Jerick McKinnon, and I think he'll be one of the reasons why the Chiefs move on to the AFC title game. Number two on my list, I have Frank the Shark Clark. You know he's great in the postseason, and he's always due for having one of those big, massive games, whether that be in the wild card, divisional, AFC championship, or Super Bowl. They've been to a Super Bowl both years Clark's been here, and he's had something to do with the Chiefs getting there. Now, in the wild card game against Pittsburgh, he wasn't very active. You know, the only guys that got sacks in that game was Mike Dana and Tershawn Wharton, Turk Wharton. But Frank Clark can also just cause havoc in the game. He can have some quarterback pressure, some quarterback hits, force an errant throw, knock a pass down. I know Chris Jones is known for that, but why the hell can't Frank Clark do it? And if you're going to win this game, Frank Clark's going to need to be big, and your entire front four is going to need to be big. Chris Jones, Jaron Reed, Derek Nnadi, Melvin Ingram, all those guys. You have to step up in this game. Because last time, Josh Allen was 21 of 26. Sat in the pocket, clean pocket, jersey wasn't very scuffed up. Now, he ran it a couple of times. He had 11 carries in that game. And he can take off, but if you can sort of bring that heat, just sparingly, get him off his game, discombobulate him. What did Jordan say earlier in the show? He's somebody that gets rattled, and it can really affect his game. He's one of the quarterbacks, though elite. If things aren't going his way, he's getting knocked down. His passes aren't connecting. He's throwing all over the place. It's Aaron, wild, everything. Any word you want to say for having a bad game, Josh Allen gets a little bit rattled. And that can completely alter what the Bills can do. So Frank Clark, I think, is going to have a big impact in throwing off Josh Allen and his game. And lastly, not a player, not a coordinator. I guess you could say he's somewhat of a coordinator, but it's going to be Andy Reid. He's going to be the third hero to the game. And yes, are there some very frustrating and head-scratching calls he's made? Yes, running it on 2nd and 10, in my eyes, is a terrible decision. Not going for it on 4th and 2 from midfield is a bad decision. I feel like you go for it in that scenario because field goals or punting in your opponent's territory is a bad move, at least in my eyes. But I feel like in this game, knowing what happened first time around, we're going to see some tricks come out of the bag. Right? We're going to get maybe the best version of this Chiefs offense, that offense we saw in the AFC Championship game last year. And Andy Reid will be at the head of that. And if he can do that, and this offense looks great, then everybody, every skill position player is not going to have to do much because everything is going to be set up for them. Everything's going to be set up for Mahomes, the running backs, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Byron Pringle, Mecole Hardman, Josh Gordon, all of them, D-Rob. Pick a name because Andy Reid can set them up for success if he does things the right way. If he can really manipulate this very stout and tough Bills defense. So those are my three heroes to the game for the Chiefs moving on to the AFC Championship game. Jerick McKinnon, Frank Clark, Andy Reid. I hope this isn't the last time for a while that I do three heroes to the game on a Friday. Hopefully we'll have another shot to do it next weekend. With that, it is now time for our favorite segment of Fact or Fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Fact or fiction, Damon Arnett will start a game for Kansas City next season.
I see a very similar path for Damon Arnett and what DeAndre Baker's was. Mm-hmm. That I think he's going at some point to break through onto the roster because you know guys in your secondary can get banged up. Right now we know with the Chiefs, Rashad Fenton's banged up. But with Damon Arnett and being kind of similar to DeAndre Baker, being a first-round talent, somebody that didn't really reach his ceiling early on in his career, I feel like he'll break through with the roster next season. He won't start, so I'm going to go fiction on this, but I think he will get some meaningful snaps for Kansas City next season.
Fact or fiction, Mahomes has more passing yards and less turnovers than Allen on Sunday.
I mean, that is the name of the game. You know, I think which quarterback has a more efficient game, I mean, there's no shock. If your quarterback has an efficient game, he doesn't turn it over, you're probably going to have a good chance to win that game. But sometimes, you know, if a team's coming back, they'll have more passing yards, and maybe sometimes they don't have as many turnovers, but maybe their defense plays well. They get a few points on the defensive end. Maybe they just outcoached them, right? But I feel like in this game, I'm going to go Patrick Mahomes. Man, I'm going back and forth. I feel like I'm going to go fact on this. I think Mahomes has the better game. He knows that he was far worse than Allen the first time around. I think that Mahomes has the better game, the cleaner game than Josh Allen, and the Kansas City Chiefs will advance to the AFC title game.
Fact or fiction, Remy Martin has his first 20-point game with Kansas.
The thing with Remy Martin is I don't even know if he's going to have that chance because sometimes when he's doing too much, he finds himself on the bench. He played 2 minutes in the second half down in Norman. So having 20 points means that he's really going to have to show in the first couple minutes while he's on the floor that he's valuable to the team. He's valuable to the offense, and he's not corrupting anything. And when Bill Self sees that, he'll keep him on the floor. I think he's due for a big game, but upwards of leading the team in scoring, I still think it's going to be Ochai Agbaji or Christian Brown. So I'm going to go fiction. I don't think he's due for his first 20-point game, but it will come at some point later this season.
Factor fiction, Tom Brady's final game is on Sunday.
I'm not even going to get into that because I think Tom Brady, you know, still has another year or two. I mean, if you're leading the league in passing attempts, I mean, you still have it. As long as you have an all-pro offensive line like he does, he gets rid of the ball quickly, no injury is going to happen. He always takes care of his body. Tampa Bay's still in their prime right now of this team. Mm-hmm. They could make a couple of Super Bowl runs. I feel like Tom Brady will retire when he says, you know what, I'm just kind of bored of this. I know I can still play, but I want to spend time with the family. It's not going to be the NFL telling Tom Brady that he needs to retire. So I'm going to go fiction. No way in hell this will be his last game of his career on Sunday.
Factor fiction, Frank Clark tallies at least a sack and a half on Sunday.
That'd be great. You know, I think anybody on the front four, if they can get a sack and a half, I feel like they'll really sort of discombobulate Josh Allen. Is it going to be Frank Clark? I think he'll get at least a couple of quarterback pressures. You know what? Screw it. I'm optimistic. I think he will get at least a sack, but I'm going to go fiction, not a sack and a half. I think at least one sack for the Shark on Sunday night, and I think he will have a big reason, or he will be a big reason why the Chiefs can screw up Josh Allen and his rhythm. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back on Monday at 10 a.m. You enjoy the weekend and the game, Kansas City.